Oh, well,
Wow.
I guess we
All
can
right.
talk about the NFL draft if we have to.
You know ID in the town all day. ID in the FEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the FEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are joined this week, his third Pelton brother. You know him as the decider because of his role helping us pick various food competitions in the finals. But today he's coming to us in his role as NFL draft analyst and the proprietor of 3SigmaAthlete.com. Welcome back to the pod, as always, Zach Whitman.
Hey guys, I have to say I honestly wish I was here as the decider working on Seattle's best teriyaki. It's
God,
really
that be great?
It is a tough thing in my life right now that is not happening. That would be wrapping up here pretty shortly, right? If that bracket was going on.
I don't know exactly what the timeline was because it was going to be different than the usual winter competitions. But yeah, we'd probably be getting pretty close at this point because we've missed now a month and a half, I think.
That's time we're never going to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Teriyaki we're never going to eat.
Really makes
we're just going to have to make up for it with make up for lost teriyaki once we're able to.
Am I looking at the wrong website? What is the website for 3 Sigma Athlete? Are you still updating that?
Number 3 Sigma Athlete.
Yeah, the other one might get flagged by your ISP, so just watch out for that.
Are there updated rankings for 2020?
Yeah. It's under the 2020 rankings.
Yeah. it's right there at the top. Yes, it's hard to miss if you're on the correct website.
Is there something wrong with my internet? I feel like I'm like in a cached version or something. It just says Sparked Rankings 2020 links to come soon.
You can't click on that. You have to click on the actual position.
So okay. I would say 3 Sigma Athlete has a similar production quality to the Pelton cast in several ways.
Oh, wow. It's the most offensive thing you've ever said to us.
In that, it has a highly dedicated but passionate group of people who happen to live around Seattle and be between the ages of 25 and 37. 40, but also, 45? it is broken in a way where when you actually click on the link, it doesn't actually take you to anything. You have to scroll over it and then you do the hover and then you can drop down. And then the other thing I have done to specifically antagonize people is I refuse to call the archive the Sparkive, which has been brought up several times. But it brings me great joy not to kowtow.
So you're not clever if you suggest you to call it the Sparkive.
Well, I mean, you're just as clever as like all the other people who have suggested it.
It does make me feel bad. I prefer my puns to be a little more clever than that.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Like,
what are we doing?
Sparkive.
No, I did. A couple weeks ago when I was looking at the website, I tweeted Zach that, and he said, you're not the first. Let's start this podcast by talking. We went through at the end of the Seahawks playoff run with third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin what we thought the needs were going into the offseason. Now we've seen much of free agency play out, although there remains one very large wild card remaining in what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney. Zach, what do you feel like the Seahawks' biggest needs are now going into the draft after free agency?
I think there's a few different ways of looking at it. I mean, obviously, the most conventional way is just to look at the team and kind of figure out what they were bad at last year, I guess, and what they're losing. For me, though, maybe the scariest part of last season was when Tyler Lockett got hurt. The team changed significantly, right? I mean, it was night and day from when he got hurt against the Niners in the third or fourth quarter, whenever that was, in the following like six games, maybe. They really didn't bounce back with the offense for quite a while. So for me, I think given the strength of the class and given the team's reliance efficiency-wise on the pass game, if not by volume, upgrading the receiving core is pretty important with depth and having someone else who can get open like Lockett can and make those tough catches, contested windows and all that. I mean, some of this was addressed by the recent trade, but I'd like to see them invest at corner. They haven't done a lot of that, obviously, in the history of the Pete Carroll era, but when they have invested in corner relatively early or heavily, third, fourth, fifth rounds, there have been some. Obviously, their later round picks haven't been that good. I'd like to see them focus on some coverage. And beyond that, I guess, you know, they've signed roughly 14 offensive linemen, so it becomes difficult to see, like, how they sign or draft offensive linemen and make it on the roster. But good roster building would involve kind of spending a few mid or late round picks on linemen, you know, fourth, fifth rounders every year and cycling those in and developing them. So I think those are kind of the major position groups that I'm interested in.
Yeah, I don't think the needs have necessarily changed all that much given free agency. I mean, you wouldn't say, like, wide receiver that because of the signing of Philip Dorsett that they've addressed that need necessarily. And especially with the announcement that Malik Turner almost certainly will not be returning. There clearly is a hole there. Pass rush to me is still, you know, they have signed some pass rushers in former Seahawks. But even if they were to bring back somebody like Jadeveon Clowney, I still feel like there's a place for one more young pass rusher. And it really, the whole picture looks pretty similar to what it did the day the season ended.
I mean, I think that you guys are maybe underestimating the extent to which cornerback has changed, not technically via free agency, but with the trade for Quentin Dunbar.
Right, but how many corners play on the field ideally at one time, right? In the NFL, what, 70 or 80% of the time they should be playing?
Two, and only two if you're the Seahawks.
So I guess for me, like, if you're not convinced by Trey Flowers, then they still have a pretty big hole at third corner. And so I would love to see them pick up someone who could play in a nickel package, because it does seem like their biggest weakness on defense last year wasn't pass rush. It was playing a third linebacker or a bad nickel corner. And having a third corner there who's not getting shredded quite as bad as last year would, I think, be a pretty big improvement.
I do find it interesting if you look around the mock drafts. I went by the most recent Seahawks.com roundup of them. The vast majority of them have them going for a defensive end, which is a position that Zach didn't mention. And to some extent, it feels like there is a concern from a numbers standpoint. Now, you know, we have gotten some reporting that they see Bruce Irvin is, you know, kind of playing in base defense as a linebacker, much like he did during his first run in Seattle before becoming a pass rusher in those third down obvious pass rush situations. But if you assume that they're either going to sign Clowney, or if he goes elsewhere, that they're going to make a run at another defensive end, almost certainly Everson Griffin, then there is probably a bit of a numbers squeeze, having also brought in Benson Mayo into a contract that, you know, you would expect him certainly to make the team. And then I guess you start to run into the question of, does LJ Collier not make the team as a first-round pick in his second season, which is a question I don't wish to consider right now.
Yeah, and from my perspective, the Seahawks, we have what, is this... This now our we've gone 10 full years with this front office and coaching partnership, right? I think there are pretty. Is this not 10?
Going into season 11.
Yeah, exactly. So we've had a full decade of watching Pete and John conduct business, and I think it becomes pretty obvious that they are better at drafting some positions, and maybe it's that they're better at utilizing picks at some positions because they're better at coaching also. Whatever the root cause is there. I get pretty scared of them drafting a defensive end. There haven't been that many successes. Obviously, the Bruce Irvin pick you could consider a success. There were several defensive ends taken around and after that you probably would rather have. And then the Frank Clark one was where a top 15 talent fell because of, you know, obviously severe off the field issues. And that was a great pick at the time. But I guess I question their judgment a bit there. And I think much more important than drafting players to fit a need early in the draft, you're really just trying to draft good players, because no matter where your player is, I guess besides maybe backup quarterback, the amount of value that you get out of 4 years of a rookie contract from a player who's a star player out of those first few rounds is just absolutely enormous. And so getting that at any position, kind of regardless of what your team needs are, I think is really valuable. So I would rather focus on positions where I do trust them a little more. Obviously, their track record at wide receiver is not perfect. Their track record at corner is not perfect. But I do feel like they've had some good picks there. They've done good things. I somewhat trust their evaluation there more. Whereas with defensive ends, I guess, get concerned because they have had some hits, but they've also had, you know, quite a few high-profile misses.
Yeah, I just think that's an interesting point in general as, like, a draft building across the league standpoint is, like, aside from quarterback – which you know that you're not going to play two quarterbacks at any given time. You almost never should be doing this draft for need thing, right? Because having a very good player under contract at a cheap number for 4 years is more important than basically anything else, and needs change instantly in the NFL.
I mean, that does maybe transition us into talking about this year's draft class. How do you feel about the strength of edge rushers in this year's draft? Because it does seem like there's a number that, you know, are mocked to go in that late first round, maybe early second round range, where, you know, we can't necessarily look at the Seahawks as being their current pick, given their track record of virtually already always trading down.
Yeah, so there are a few positions where I think metrics are probably most useful. Both production and athletic, right? And it's a varying spectrum, I guess, across all the positions for what things matter. Edge is one of the things that really is probably easiest to measure. And this is a class where the productive players and the athletic players don't really align necessarily. To some extent, we are hamstrung by just not having pro days. There's a global health crisis that somewhat limited the ability of large groups of people to meet and conduct athletic testing. And that means we just don't have a lot of data. But what we do have is fairly spotty production from all but a few guys. I'm reading the ESPN Plus article, Saxier, which takes the Football Outsiders metric. It's been used for many years, and there's an article about there on ESPN Plus that walks through it. There are a few, maybe AJ Epinesa from Iowa is one of the ones that actually does kind of meet generally good standards in production and is athletic enough, but you're not really not seeing the really athletic guys be the name guys that are going early. And that means that there's pretty big red flags. There is a long, long history of unathletic defensive ends and unproductive defensive ends. And in this case, we just don't have a lot of guys who are productive and athletic there. And those are the kind of iffy prospects that scare me a bit for the Seahawks late in the first. I think in general in this draft, there's probably a bit of strength in maybe the middle second, early third, like in that general range. But there's a really flat talent level probably. And we're all so certain, right, to say all this. It's absurd to be so confident. But there is just a very flat distribution. And we know that it's true in general, right? That's not just this draft class. It's always smart to, mm-hmm. to trade down. And so I'd be very, very leery of everyone in that late first round, not just normally, but many of the players in that range this year just seem to have kind of glaring red flags.
Is there a player or players that you would be willing to trade up for that, you know, if they're still on the board, you would definitely want to stay put where the Seahawks are at 27?
There is no one I think I would trade up for. The position that is by far the deepest in the draft is wide receiver, which I think is also the position I would draft. I would rate most highly if I were the Seahawks. I guess if by some weird happenstance, if there was a Laremy Tunsil situation and Tristan Wirfs like had a gas mask on in a video that came out before the draft and he suddenly dropped, you know, into the 20s, I guess that's a situation where maybe you try to trade up a pick or two or something to get an elite tackle.
I mean, now that might be appropriate precaution at this point.
Very good point. Maybe that would actually help his draft stock. Shows wisdom and all. But if there was a truly elite talent that fell down out of like the tackles and receivers that you feel very, very, very strongly about, I guess maybe there's an argument, but I just see there being a very strong chance the receiver that you get at 38 is going to be the same one that you get at 20, and there not being a huge difference, I guess, between those. So I just think, given the strength of the class, the depth of wide receivers and what you can get there, it really does seem like kind of a dead set that the Seahawks should be trying to trade down. Now, it was funny to see the story about how remote drafting is going to make trading less viable, which seems crazy because that's all based on phone calls, which is all I'm able to do now. So it seems like that technology is still going to function even with the pandemic going on.
I'm pretty skeptical about that also. Of those wide receivers that you talk about who are in sort of that like Seahawks range, I mean, all we hear about is this receiver class, and really you just hope that the Seahawks are capable of capitalizing on a strength within the class, because, you know, we've seen them not do it before when there were other positions that were really strong in different classes. But of the picks who could be there in, let's say, the Seahawks range, all the way down to, say, 38 or 40 if they were to trade down. Are there any players that you're looking at in that range that makes sense for the Seahawks?
Yeah, I think there's actually a group of four players that I would expect to go in that early, middle, second round range. And this is similar to 2014's wide receiver class when you had a bunch of guys go in the second round, like Allen Robinson. And maybe a guy falls further. You know, he was thought to go in the early 40s, late 30s at the time. I think he went 60 or 61 or something to Philadelphia, something like that, that year. The four guys I'd look at in the second round are Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, LaVisca Chenault from Colorado, Denzel Mims from Baylor, and Jalen Reagor from TCU. They're all kind of in a similar class there. The guy out of that group, I think, that is really special for the Seahawks is probably Reagor. He has really elite production, elite athlete, extremely young. He had a breakout season production-wise at age 18. He had a super elite breakout season at age 19. And he had really bad quarterback play. There's this great clip going around of him absolutely roasting a corner on a go route and then making like an athletic, like perfect circus catch just to like go out of bounds for 30 yards when he was clearly downfield and could have scored like a long TD. He's a really, really good player. He's kind of like Tyler Lockett, you know, faster basically. And I think probably two full years younger at time of draft. And if he was playing on any kind of team that had a good quarterback or a modern, you know, passing offense, I think he would have been going in the top 15. There's nothing to me that says he's worse than Henry Ruggs, who's going to go in the top, you know, half of the first round. I think if Jalen Reagor is playing for Alabama, he would be that kind of pick.
Well, that's exciting.
I know. I'm like, sign me up.
He is like 5'10". I will say he's like 5'10". That's the negative, right? He is short, but he is an absolute burner. And really productive and kind of like very Lockett-ish, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah, this,
yeah. If only we could think of some undersized players who were extremely productive in college who went lower than they should have, who ended up on the Seahawks. I can't.
They haven't necessarily shied away from smaller receivers, right?
No, I think they actually, the Seahawks value, I do think they value separation among their receivers, the ones they draft. I don't think that's true of all, but I think they definitely. Those smaller receivers, I think they value that ability to get open and gain separation. And I don't, as much as Seahawks Twitter and Seahawks fans generally talk about having a big receiver, which has happened every year ever since I feel like I've ever been online. I don't think the Seahawks have ever seen it that way, except for drafting, you know, legend Chris Durham in 2011 or that. But they haven't really invested high draft capital in that as much as people want them to take like Darrell Green Beckham or whatever, right?
I mean, DK.
Yeah, they have a big receiver. They've got it checked off.
It's actually offensive for you to classify DK Metcalf as a big receiver. He's just a good receiver. So it's
that's fine. But that's one of the things he is big. You don't need
receiver. I remember talking to some of like the people who do much better film work and understand this. And how do you classify DK Metcalf? And I guess he, to me, like first would be a fast receiver. I think when people talk about a big receiver, they're talking about someone like Sidney Rice, who has a big catch radius, who can run some of the corner and post routes maybe that in different ways than we currently do. And so I do think there is a difference in what people really, really want is someone who almost like more like Josh Gordon, I guess, is who you'd put there, who makes it the life easier on the quarterback by making the passing windows bigger. And I do think we don't have a lot of those types. But also it's not clear to me that Russell Wilson is hampered by having Tyler Lockett around. Tyler Lockett seems like a really good player.
Yeah. He really needs that. It seems like also Jalen Reagor is watching this highlight reel of him, having just heard of him just now.
You didn't even know the name?
I'd heard the name, but I knew nothing about him. Also is a very good punt returner as well.
Yes. Yeah. Good special teamer, really fat. I mean, he is kind of like Tyler Lockett with a jetpack going back, but younger, and that's why he'd be going earlier in the draft.
And you don't necessarily want Tyler Lockett returning kicks going into next season.
No, as we learned in the Seahawks rewatch that we're doing every week, Tyler Lockett used to be fast, but is no longer fast because if you watch old Tyler Lockett, he moved much differently than he does now.
The other thing we're learning is a reminder that once upon a time, Earl Thomas returned punts.
Wow.
Also, Jeremy Lane returned one and he fumbled it.
I should
mention that.
But I think this is the part in the pod where we note that it's always so fun to like get excited about these players because Zach talks them up, only to see them then draft LJ Collier, who was Rager's teammate at TCU.
You know what I will say is, I think Rager is the example of one that makes all of us feel good, but also the Seahawks might. That is a type of player actually, I think they would not be disinclined in drafting.
Where do you stand on Michael Pittman, receiver from USC?
Yeah, so I actually, like, in a normal draft, I think I would actually like him quite a lot. I think given the strength of this class, he'll drop maybe a little bit further than people are thinking, late second, early third, somewhere in that range. He actually has pretty good production, pretty athletic. He's a little older than you might want to see out of a receiver, given how young most people above him are in the class, but he's still really quite productive for that age. So I'm not negative on him at all. He's not someone I would target, but if he was dropping and he's there in the third round, I think he's a really solid pick. Also, he's apparently like a star special teamer, so that's probably something the Seahawks are all excited about.
Anything else on the wide receivers that we should get into?
I also just had to say, how frustrated are we going to be when the 49ers draft Henry Ruggs with that 13th pick that they picked up for the Colts?
I mean, it's going to be annoying. I will say, I think Justin Jefferson's the one I probably would be most annoyed by out of LSU.
Okay, but, so when they draft Justin Jefferson, then we'll be
angry. Honestly, the top of this class is crazy. Other receivers I think that I have my eye on. So what you look for, I would love to see the Seahawks take a receiver in the second round, preferably Rager, but also Mims, Chenault, and Ayuk. I don't have strong negative feelings toward any of them. I think that whole group is really solid. I think I would love for them to take another receiver in the third or fourth round. Guys that make a lot of sense there. Bryan Edwards out of South Carolina. There's been a lot of, I think, chatter around him. He was massively productive. He had a breakout season at age 18, which correlates really well to NFL success. And he's going pretty, you know, mid third round, fourth round type draft position. And he's only going to be 21 when the season starts. Isaiah Hodgins out of Oregon State is also going to be 21 when the season starts. He is tall and lanky, but actually tested out pretty well. He's massively productive at Oregon State in terms of share production of that offense, and also had breakout seasons at 19 and 20. Really, really nice. And then my late shot here is Darnell Mooney out of Tulane. My guy had a dominant season at age 19. He's projected to go in like the sixth or seventh round. Good athlete. He's fast. He gets like comparisons to like Paul Richardson, maybe like a poor man's T.Y. Hilton. But kind of the quintessential case of a late round pick that you want to take a shot on, has the right peripherals, has the right profile, and is just, I mean, a seventh round pick basically has no cost, right? That's just fancy Absolutely. Undrafted free agency. And so I would love for them to kind of take three, honestly, one early, one middle, and then one as a flyer, like in the seventh round.
Three receivers. Hello.
It's that good of a class. There are a lot of good receivers in this class.
Not everyone seems to agree on everything, but everyone seems to agree that this receiver class is unreal.
It is hard to explain, like, the athleticism, the production, the ages of these players. Like, you compare it to, like, last year when you're excited about players, and it blows it out of the water. I mean, there are 20 guys that should go in like the first four rounds in any year. So it is a really stacked class. And the Seahawks, of course, are going to take one for the first time, like in the early fourth, and it's going to be Colin Johnson.
And of course, the reason they're going to do that is so that they can draft a running back somewhere in the first three rounds. Are you sure?
So what about an offensive line? Obviously, they've brought in quite a few veteran players this offseason, but definitely need to sort of fill in the line with some younger players and some players who can be filling in for the future. Who do you see as potential targets in that, if they were to go linemen in that late first, early second range?
I think the one that makes and the Seahawks are maybe most telegraph their moves on offensive line because they like big tackles. Isaiah Wilson out of Georgia probably is the most clear there. He's 6'6 and a half, 350, has 35 and a half inch arms, and I think like an 84 plus inch wingspan, all of which to say he's like by far the longest in the class. really beefy. He has the pedigree of being a big-time recruit prior to Georgia, obviously, which they do like. And he is obviously humongous, and that they do like that in their linemen. And his raw natural ability is extremely high. I will say he's young. He's not even going to be 22 when the season starts. I think he's like 21 right about now, his birthday. So I wouldn't even hate the pick, honestly. I mean, investing in offensive line, I think, is generally smart, especially when you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson and the pass protection they had last season. He's not the best prospect, but honestly, it's a coin flip at a certain point. You're not going to get one of the elite tackle prospects where the Seahawks are picking. And so if they did pick him, I would probably talk myself into it. Obviously, I think a receiver is the right choice, but I could definitely understand them going with Wilson.
What do you think about Austin Jackson out of USC at tackle?
I think a similar story. With him, he is dramatically underaged. He tested out well. I think he rated third in the class at the combine. And something you have to do with athletic testing, too, is you have to adjust it for age a little bit, which I don't explicitly do. But especially with offensive linemen, 21-year-old offensive linemen test out typically a lot different than 24-year-old offensive linemen. There's a big curve there in ability. And so when you see players in this class, there's many of them. All the best testers actually end up being young, early declares from big schools. It is promising. Austin Jackson, when he tested out, wasn't even, I think, 20 and a half. And he's a really solid athlete. Again, a big recruit when he came out of Arizona a few years ago. Played at USC. He's big. He's long. He's athletic. He's another one I could see them taking. I think that it seems like Wilson, just to me, I actually picked between those two. Wilson probably just fits their sweet spot a little more in the fact that he's massive, and they seem to get excited about that. But I think Jackson also kind of fits their profile. Not saying that their profile is a good one, because their offensive lineman track record has not been ideal, but I think both of them do fit into that spot.
They managed to get at least one offensive lineman paid this offseason.
On the interior line, Cesar Ruiz from Michigan is someone who's been linked to them a lot, is someone who can apparently play either center or guard.
Yeah, so I will say, among players that this is a tough one, because everything in me wants to be there are a lot of things to like there. He's very young. I think he's a similar age to Austin Jackson when he's not even 21 yet. Will barely turn 21 by the time the next season starts. And all that's really good. So for me, it comes down to if he can play guard or not. He's probably going to go in the middle of the second round. And if he was one to fall a little bit, maybe he's going late second, more like a Mitch Morse. There could be a good pick there, because I think he actually is going to be a good player. And to a certain extent, that is important. But if he's playing center, is it worth it? So I guess for me, it's what position do you think he plays? And I'm not an expert on if he's going to play, you know, center or guard. But if he is sitting there and he falls a little bit and it's more like the middle, late second round, that is a move where I would talk myself into it, because he's young. He has a history of good play. And if he does play guard, it is a position that the Seahawks could use it at. And it seems like he definitely has some issues in the scouting report, but man, it would be nice to actually have someone they feel good about on the interior line, given how they've filled out that part of the roster with kind of spare pieces for a while.
As far as pure guards, looks like Robert Hunt from Louisiana is generally considered the top-rated player there.
He is incredibly old. And I say that, of course, because he's like 24 years old, which, not in the grand scheme of things, an old person, but a little old for a draft pick. So I guess it's tough there, because we know statistically how to like take a receiver who's 24 and compare them to a 19-year-old. Because there's direct metrics, right? There are objective things that you can do. You can normalize by team stats, and you can try to get your best. We don't know how to do that for an offensive lineman, so I think it's pretty tough. But I would weigh that with some pretty heavy skepticism, because the history of really old players is just not good, really, at any position.
How much do you think the NFL in general, and then specifically the Seahawks, factor age into these draft picks? Obviously, they didn't with their first pick last year. But in general, how much do you think they factor that in?
I don't think they factored in nearly enough. It probably gets factored in more than it was 10 years ago and even 5 years ago. We do see a little bit of a trend that way. But there are a lot of teams who still, and it's not just age, right? The stats say that teams trade up two spots from 20 to 18 and they have no chance of getting a better player because it's a total crapshoot. Teams trust in themselves too much. And so I think we still see a lot of teams making excuses for players who are old. And people love to do that. And there's a receiver prospect this year, Van Jefferson, who's controversial. He's 24 years old. He's a transfer who was at Ole Miss. I think he's even came in before DK Metcalf, but he crossed paths DK Metcalf for a year or two at Ole Miss, and he went to Florida, and he has no production really, or history of production, and he's really overaged, but he has like kind of exciting tape, and people are going to take him among all these receivers who have better pedigrees and have fewer red flags. Maybe Van Jefferson was screwed because he was on a team with a lot of good receivers at Ole Miss and he had a bad quarterback at Florida. But teams get very certain when they fall in love with certain things and then they get the blinders on. I think that happens a lot with old players where they isolate a trait, a thing they can do well on tape, and then they don't do a good job of realizing that your hit rate is lower inherently because you're taking an older player and they're not able, because you can't adjust tape in the same way you can numbers. And so I think mm-hmm. maybe 5 years ago there was, you know, the inefficiencies, I guess, have moved for me. And I think probably the one in the last few years that has been maybe the most important is age. And it sounds stupid because it's not even a statistic, right? True. Like it's not something that you go and try to calculate or, aggregate. It's just literally how old the person is, but it's probably the thing that is easiest to do, but also that teams still seem to somehow be missing on.
I mean, this is what's true in the NBA for a long period of time, and it's much more clear there where you've got players entering at a wider variety of ages, so not surprising to me.
The most rudimentary people definitely think age is a statistic. They're crunching the numbers on age.
I mean, this brings up the picture of Dave Gettleman, like, with his one laptop.
Don't forget his mind in the typing.
Using his Wii remote to calculate what age everybody is.
Somewhat surprisingly, a number of the mock drafts have the Seahawks going interior defensive line in the first round. Number one, do you see that as a need or a possibility? And then number two, let's talk about some of these guys specifically. It looks like in that range, Ross Blacklock from TCU, Justin Madubuike from Texas A&M, and Jordan Elliott from Missouri.
I have to admit, it's a terrible defensive interior defensive line class. So you sent me some names to look at, so I dutifully looked through this list. Under Ross Blacklock, I wrote, "This pick would hurt my feelings."
Another TCU defensive line.
That is the main reason, I think, because emotionally it would be difficult to handle. But he tore his Achilles a year ago. And that to me on a player who's like, so, okay, let's talk about red flags. He is an athletic interior lineman who did not test well and tore his Achilles a year ago, or I guess a year and a half ago, two seasons ago. Those things together make me pretty leery, especially given it's a very, very bad interior line class. And so that means you're just getting a worse player on average at a certain draft position. Yeah. So not only are you taking a player who has obvious red flags right away at a position that's not premium, the Seahawks don't have a specific huge need at, but it's also in a bad class. So kind of be the equivalent of what, like the, taking a tight end the year before George Kittle.
Yes.
Madubuike, I wrote, "This would also hurt my feelings." I don't know. Like, if you look at the historical data on defensive linemen, they have one of the flattest distributions in the top of the draft, but that continues through many rounds. And so you get a lot of good players in the third, fourth, and fifth rounds. And so like these kind of players who are kind of not even three down players necessarily, who are rotational defensive linemen, it's wild to me that any teams take these guys early. Honestly, I think this whole class of player I probably am somewhat down on, but this might actually be more annoying than a running back, because if they took a TCU defensive lineman early, that would be like just an emotional hammer blow.
My God. And that team's name is the Seattle Seahawks. I feel like those mock drafts, and looking through quite a few of them, it's A, I think they're roasting the Seahawks a little bit. They don't realize it, but they are. And B, when you look through the Seahawks roster, if you're a mock draft person, there's no obvious position. You're just like, well, fuck it. The Seahawks kind of sort of need offensive linemen always and seem to like drafting defensive linemen. So we'll just throw one of those at the board, right? And it feels like that's why we're seeing that come up in these mocks.
Like injured players.
Like unathletic players from TCU.
They like bad defensive tackles. They like defensive tackles who write CVs. I don't know.
And so any other thoughts on the edge position? I know that we talked about AJ Epinesa from Iowa.
Yeah, some other names there. Kalavon Chaisson from LSU. Yitor Gross-Matos from Penn State and Terrell Lewis from Alabama among those mocked to the Seahawks.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting class here because, again, like I was saying, that the players you think that should be the productive ones, the ones that you're taking, may not have tested well, and that's a pretty good red flag. So Chaisson, the LSU defensive end, is scary to me. He had pretty poor production and kind of classic And I know he was hurt in 2018, so there's a discussion there of how much is fair, but that is a player who it seems like is going higher because of hype from a really successful team season. We didn't see him test, and maybe he'd be one of those guys like Josh Sweat who comes in and just blows it out and is an incredible athlete. We don't know that. And just on a poor production, it's pretty scary to take him. He has, it's almost like he has Danielle Hunter type production, which Danielle Hunter worked out. But we don't know that he's the otherworldly kind of athlete that he is. I will say he's young. And this year, we just have less information with testing, and it's being specifically important for edge players. Maybe we'll have a higher miss rate this year just because we don't know as much. Gross-Matos, I just wrote meh. I don't see a lot being interesting there. Not great production, and not likely to be a great athlete either. Not young. And really, I guess, kind of one of the lankier types the Seahawks focus on, but is probably not the kind of pass rusher that we all think about. I would be fine with Lewis from Alabama in like the third round because there is some stuff there to like. But it seems like, again, because this edge class has such a drop off after the top edge player, obviously, it just seems like they're all going to get overdrafted. And so it's very hard for me to look at that class at all and get excited because last year there were maybe 8 good edge players and the Seahawks took the 9th. And this year there's like 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever, and the Seahawks would be taking like the 5th. And that just seems like a really bad place to be in.
So is there positionally sort of like a Goldilocks zone for where the Seahawks are? Because you're talking at the wide receiver class, and we know that it's a super deep class. But that means that maybe you wait a little bit longer to take a wide receiver because you know that the 10th one is going to be probably just as good as the 5th. Is there any position where it feels like the value makes sense where they're sitting in the draft?
I mean, I think taking a tackle or any kind of offensive lineman in the second round kind of makes sense. It's very much the move, like what's the meme? Like we already have that at home from John Mulaney. You know, when his dad would go to Wendy's and he wouldn't order them anything because they already have it at home. That's kind of how I feel like when you draft offensive linemen, right? Like it's not that exciting. I will say Austin Jackson has a history of blocking kicks, which I feel like if Pete Carroll like accidentally left the game tape on and like it scrolled through on the special teams and he sees Austin Jackson block a kick, he might draft him just for that. Because I'm not sure anything would excite Pete Carroll as much as an offensive lineman that would like sub in on kick block duty.
That's pretty thrilling stuff. Okay, so then also beyond that, is it just like you were mentioning? It's a crapshoot basically. We know that volume is the most important thing that you can get in the draft, and if the Seahawks are making potentially 3 second round picks or 2 second round picks and then a couple of third round picks, right? Like, do we just want them to pick up a lot of players in this early range and potentially find 1 or 2 important players for their roster going forward?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Your hit rate is not even going to be 50%, right? So you take a bunch out of that 5, those 5 picks you talk about, if they get 2 good players, that's a superlative draft, right? That's phenomenal. And so I think you're hoping that you take players in the right positions so that when they do hit, they're really meaningful. Taking, you know, Puna Ford in the second round wouldn't be great, because even if he's awesome, it doesn't matter. It's Knox Harris and gets traded for almost nothing last year as a nose tackle, right? So it's taking volume, but then also taking volume of the right positions. And then maybe in the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, that's where you go and find the guys who are more obscure scheme fits at positions that you think are less valuable, but you think they have specific traits that help you, you know, in your scheme. That's whatever. That's fine. You know, live it up, Pete. But in those first few rounds, I would definitely be taking high volume of very, very specific positions and just hoping, you know, to get basically two good players out of it.
Is there anyone that stands out to you out of the cornerback class who would make sense for the Seahawks if they go there early?
Yeah, so I will say I think corner might be like the hardest position to evaluate in many ways. It is fickle, but there are a lot of elite athletes who end up being really, really good players, and so it's one of those things, because I don't think the Seahawks are actually going to take a corner early, right? It becomes very difficult because of their history, and so you have to start looking like who's going to be there later. Because I would love to say AJ Terrell from Clemson makes a lot of sense, but he's probably going to go in like the late first round. And of course, Jeff Okuda from Ohio State is very good, but he's going to go like fourth overall or something. So then you start scrolling down the list and you look at it and you're like, okay, I don't know. Maybe there's not the group of players in the middle round in this position that make a ton of sense. Maybe Jalen Johnson from Utah kind of fits around the right. If they were going to draft a nickel early, but it just feels inconceivable that they draft a nickel early. So I don't know. It's one of those things where, as much as I would love them to prioritize it, it's not going to happen, because I'm really interested in Noah. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, from Auburn. He's, you know, incredibly young, has the right kind of pedigree. He's more of a nickel corner size, but he doesn't have 32 inch arms. He has 31 3/4, and the Seahawks, you know, really get pretty serious about that, about the arm length being 32 or over. So I think it might just be a thing where I'm not seeing in those few rounds exactly the kind of player they would want to pick. And the Seahawks are probably most idiosyncratic about their cornerback picks. And no one's jumping out to me, I guess. It's just that obvious pick that we've seen in past years. Whereas in the Shaq Griffin year, there were like five or six corners that kind of fit right in that list that you could see them picking. I think it is harder for me to see that this year.
Well, that makes sense. I guess, you know, we'll see what the Seahawks take. I think the expectation is that they will get a couple of players. Are there any later? They will get a couple of players in the second, third round.
They're gonna get some players.
And hopefully, one of them will make sense. Are there any players in sort of the mid to later rounds that stand out to you as potential steals in this draft, though?
Yeah. So. I feel like I'm contractually obligated to bring up who probably the Seahawk favorite. I think there was a meme of the Seahawks reacting after his combine performance, which is A.J. Dillon out of Boston College. He's a running back. I'm personally not that invested in drafting a running back at all, but he's going to go in the middle rounds. He's 6 foot, like 250, incredible athlete, super explosive, and just seems like very Seahawk-y. I don't know. It's kind of like buying like the world's fanciest DVD player in like 2009. I feel like that's the thing the Seahawks are going to want to do. So I wouldn't be shocked.
What a delightful metaphor.
And then beyond that, I guess my late round guy I already mentioned is Darnell Mooney out of Tulane. I feel like someone else is going to obviously take him and I'm going to get roasted for it. But him and then I guess Isaiah Hodgins out of Oregon State. Those are the two receivers that really pop out, where I think in a normal year they might go earlier. With Hodgins, I think Mooney is just going to a small school, so he's not going to get the kind of buzz. But he has peripherals that are pretty exciting. I will say this year's kind of top athlete, and very well may have been a three sigma athlete if we had, you know, pro days to be able to fill out the testing profile, because I believe he didn't complete the agility drills at the combine, is Jeremy Chinn out of Southern Illinois. He's a 6'3", 220 safety, with just absolutely unreal athleticism. And I, that is the, it is the kind of player where you've seen the Seahawks do that before. He almost feels a little bit like Bobby Wagner-ish in going to that level of school and going to be around kind of in that late second, early third, middle third type range. And I would be very interested to see if they do it, but obviously they don't draft defensive backs early that often. So you'd have to wonder what they see him as if they did draft him there.
Are there any other like extreme athletes who could have approached if you had more info being three single athletes?
He was the main one. It's tough because without pro days, it is so hard to know. Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa, the offensive tackle, he actually did complete testing. And he was 2.4 Sigma, but that's the, he's super athletic. And that is the kind of thing where if he goes to a pro day, he's probably going to have better numbers in three areas if he does choose to test. Oftentimes offensive linemen do choose to test again, at a greater rate probably than the skill positions, or, you know, defensive backs or whatever. So I think he might have gotten there. But in general, this was not like a superlative class. There weren't tons and tons of super athletes everywhere.
I noticed that he and then Jeff Okuda are kind of the players who are in that like top 10 range who are also near the top of your Spark rankings positionally.
Yeah. I mean, Okuda obviously is going to go very, very early, but he definitely has like kind of like the perfect profile. I will say, just while we're on the topic of like overall groups, this is probably like the worst tight end class imaginable. It is truly bad. If there is a year to draft like Hunter Bryant in the fourth or fifth year, I think this is probably it.
Great. Well, I suppose that leads us to talking about some of the local prospects who are expected to be drafted or maybe undrafted this year, starting with our favorite tallest quarterback, Jacob Eason.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to be like a quarterback evaluator, but in my professional opinion as a Husky fan, I'm going to say that complete lack of pocket presence is bad, and I am not bullish on his future.
I agree.
Well, and also Spark doesn't really like Jacob Eason at all either.
I mean, honestly, I don't care how he tests. I care more that he's a really, I don't know. He's one of those guys who has like the amazing arm, right? But he just falls to pieces under pressure, and it seems like we've seen that story before. So I just, like, I have no time for that. I did see some Niners fans hoping to draft him. Yes. Which I am ready for.
Please draft him, 49ers. Where do you stand? Just this, we're not going to count this as a local player, but on Justin Herbert.
I'm also out on Justin Herbert. I saw, and again, this isn't athleticism based or whatever, but they have all, you know, the people who do a lot of looking in terms of how many tight window throws people make, how many open receivers do they miss. And he rates pretty poorly in those areas. I think he had something like the second highest in the class, along with Jordan Love, in terms of throws downfield missed when a player was open.
Really?
Strike me as that accurate a player, I guess, when I was watching him. There's probably some homer bias going on here. But he does not strike me as an exciting NFL quarterback prospect. And again, I hope he goes to division to San Francisco.
I hope they both go to San Francisco. I'm just surprised to hear you mention him alongside Jordan Love, who seems to have gotten quite a bit of hype lately and seems to have cemented himself as last of the first round quarterbacks.
Yeah, I have not watched Jordan Love. I'm not going to lie to you. I will say he's relatively young. He's not even going to be 22 when the year starts, and quarterbacks are generally older. That does bode well for him because he's a year younger than a lot of his other people in the class. And just quarterbacks are so much older when they come out generally than other positions. But I do not know enough about Jordan Love to offer up anything other than, I guess I'd rather have him than Justin Herbert.
Do you have any thoughts about the quarterback class in general with Burrow and Tua?
I think those two are good, I guess. But I honestly don't have any specific ability to evaluate quarterbacks, right? I think the stats say that Burrow and Tua are really good and the projections there are really good. But even then, I think the metrics would say there's like, what, a 40 or 50% chance at best of those guys hitting and being Pro Bowl players. So we probably just overestimate in general our ability to project guys. So I don't think they're surefire hits at all, but I do think they're good prospects and they should go 1-2.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow, I'm looking at the ESPN projections that they put together. 55% chance of starter or Pro Bowler, which means 45% chance of worse than that.
Yeah, I mean, we are bad at drafting players. I guess we aren't. Dave Gettleman is. But, like,
we also would be bad at drafting players.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know. Zach's track record is pretty good.
The benefit I have is I'm able to isolate a few people I like, right? Whereas I don't have to draft 10 a year. I feel like it's just basically impossible over any kind of tracker to draft like players in mass and do well, which is why you draft a lot of players. But I think still fans probably overestimate the hit rates. I will say, I still get people from time to time that they message me, and I'm sure they're well-meaning, and they say, but you liked Christian Sicoli. and I say, well, that's great. First of all, star of the blog, which very excited for him this week with the feature by our friend Mike B. But Christian Sicoli was a 6th-round pick, and the odds of a 6th-round pick hitting are like, I don't know, 8%. There's one good one a year, maybe two. We really need to decouple expectations around all the picks. Anything after the 4th round, I'm not going to judge a GM for, except for process. But in terms of outcome, there's just nothing you really can do. And even in the 4th round, it really is a complete crapshoot. Just those picks do have some semblance of a hit.
So wait, what round was Tedrick Thompson again?
4th. Oh, interesting.
Wow, so there you go. You've just absolved the Seahawks for taking Tedrick Thompson over George Kittle.
For liking Christian Sicoli.
I believe what I said is that the 5th, 6th, and 7th rounds, but we still can give some grief for the 4th round. The Kittle thing makes no sense to me, and I will never understand it because I don't know. Like, I make bad choices every year in personal life and in the draft. Ordering ramen, but I do not understand. I truly do not understand how George Kittle went in the 5th round. It is just baffling because he was such an obviously good prospect with all the right indicators, and just the right. That is a baffling one, and I don't understand it. And by the way, speaking of Twitter mentions, Sicoli, I get like, you know, 4 of those or whatever. I feel like I get George Kittle mentions like every other week. And it's going to be that way for like the next 12 years. And
he's always in the news.
He is. I will say his tattoos are terrible. I know I've brought this up potentially even on this podcast before, but his tattoos are bad enough that like it does make me feel a little bit better.
Drop him around at least. You're saying that George Kittle, star of stage and screen, went in the 5th round? How can that be?
Am I wrong there?
No, it just doesn't make sense. It's honestly, the Kittle draft pick is the one that I think hurts the most.
There are two big red flags there. One, the tattoos, and second, he listed Dallas Clark as his favorite tight end.
The best tight end, I think.
Top five tight ends
of all time. And all plays like 2010 on. I personally had all of them in fantasy football. Wait,
did you actually miss this? Did you, George Kittle's favorite tight ends? It was.
I read
it from the bottom up because I was scrolling up on Twitter at the time. And so it was like, it started out being relatively normal. I'm trying to pull it up here. Because like, you know, it was names like Gronk and everything. And it was with a picture by the name. And in the top one, I see a Colts jersey. And I was like, huh? Like, Eric Ebron's not that good. Like, I wasn't even keying into, like, who could possibly be the person. And then I look, and it's Dallas Clark wearing number 44.
Most importantly, this is not just George Kittle's favorite tight ends. This is George Kittle's top 5 tight ends of all time.
So, wait, here's the list. 5th on the list, Antonio Gates. 4th, Travis Kelce. 3rd, Tony Gonzalez. 2nd, Rob Gronkowski. 1st, Dallas Clark.
Did Dallas Clark go to Iowa?
I think it's an Iowa connection. Yes.
Yeah.
Noah Fant is like, he was like number 6. He was an honorable mention.
But this is the equivalent of Kevin Pelton putting Nate Robinson like as his favorite point guard ever.
Don't think I haven't considered it.
You gotta respect tight end you at Iowa. Okay, so additional local prospects. Trey Adams, tackle out of Washington.
Trey Adams is a tackle out of Washington. He is from the eastern side of the state, which is exciting. I'm actually just scrolling to the O-line page right now, so I'm going to do a little fun banter.
This is great.
Hold on. Control F.
Came back from an injury as a junior.
Yeah, he had a back injury, funny enough. I was trying to find this. I want to get the number right. He tested out as the worst athlete in the class. So I will say something happened weird with UW here. They went from, so in normal years, they have actually like probably one of the best like testing above expectation among any program. Like for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, like Kevin King and John Ross and all these guys have tested amazing. They have like several guys this year, at least 2 or 3 that are the worst at their position athletically, which does not make any sense, especially the Savon Ahmed thing makes no sense. So I it's troubling. I don't know if there's something like program wide they somehow emphasize that kind of working out less or whatever happened, but it was like an extremely bad combine for the UW players.
Would it be unfair to blame Jacob Eason for that?
No, dead on.
Okay.
It starts at the top, right?
4.62.
We like to call it the Eason effect.
He had a 24.5-inch vertical. He had a 5.640. I don't know. You do not see, he's a minus 2 sigma guy. And
wow, so he just edged out Savon Ahmed in the 40.
Ouch. Ouch.
I mean, Ahmed looked so fast when he was running for that touchdown in front sense. Of us and his family.
It does not make any sense.
I mean, and it doesn't seem like usually you're training for the month or two before the combine with, you know, a professional. It's not your training with the college team, so it doesn't feel like it actually should have anything to do with that.
No, it doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense at all. It makes you wonder. It is systemic enough where they almost all of them tested bad. That I don't know. Maybe it's just all. It's I guess it's most likely it's all coincidence. But it does make you wonder if there's some kind of different strength program where they were all just not keying it. And maybe actually what it was is that in previous years they were actually focusing on those tests a lot, and so they were testing better because they were training to those events with the junior combines every year, right? And they were getting better. Maybe that's the better side of it, is previously they were testing for or working for those tests, and now they aren't. But Ahmed is fourth from bottom among combine attendees. He ran a 4.62, which feels impossible. Even more impossible is like the 1.56.10 split, which I mean, I saw him score a touchdown in the Apple Cup where he was standing still and then accelerated 0-40 immediately. So I do not understand that number, but he did not test out well at all.
OKGs, more like slow KGs. Anyway, Hunter Bryant, tight end out of Washington.
Yeah, so Hunter Bryant also tested out poorly. I will say not as poorly. He tested out kind of like mediocre. He's in the 30th NFL percentile, which is that's a place where people are successful. But he definitely didn't test out like Ingram, the receiver out of Ole Miss, who's with the Giants now, who's kind of comped to be. But I do think that it's interesting because if he had tested out well, he probably would have gone in the second round. And now he's going to go like in the first round or something. And actually, I kind of would take the 2-round discount for him not running that fast, because he does offer certainly a skill set that many teams could use, including the Seahawks. So actually, I think that is a pick that'd be really interesting in the middle rounds.
Nick Harris seemed to test out okay.
Nick Harris is the shining grace there. And by the way, emotionally, is probably one of my favorite Seahawks or Huskies, I should say, of the last few years. Maybe he will be a Seahawk. But yeah, he tested out well relative to Huskies, I guess, here, in the 30th percentile of the NFL, which, for a center is definitely good enough. Not even 6'1", and really short arms, but that basically doesn't matter at all at center. There's basically nothing at center other than being smart. It seems like in many cases, there's no practical minimums statistically for any of the arm length or height things. So that is interesting.
And a center was one of your favorite Huskies in the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, just for that one gif of him getting pushed off and then pointing at the defensive line, right?
Oh, he slides back in the
chase. Yeah. Just for
that. No, that was pretty smooth. Anthony Gordon heading to the east side of the state from quarterback from Wazoo.
Yeah, not going to pretend I know a lot about quarterback projection, but I don't know. I'm not bullish on him. Again, I saw some Niner fans talking online on the internet about taking him, and I'm pretty fine with that. I will say he's overaged, and in the statistical tweets I do follow in terms of, you know, people who's on target and not, it did seem like he had some issues there. And it did seem like, you know, to my limited eye, when he was pressured in college, he did fall to pieces a little bit, almost similar to Eason in a way. And I think that it seems like maybe the biggest death knell for college QBs is when they just can't handle the pressure, because obviously in the NFL, your processing time is nothing. And the guys who can't deal with a rush get found out pretty quick, you know, similar to like what Jake Locker.
Wow.
Well, there was a lot going on there. I mean, you mentioned, you know, that quarterbacks tend to come into the league older. And one of the things that, you know, statistical analysis has found is that experience is really important at that position. So it's okay, I think, if you're 24, if you've started for a couple of years, like Jake Luton, who we've seen move up the boards a little bit from Morgan State. But to be Gordon and only have started as a fifth-year senior is probably not as encouraging.
Exactly. You're getting the benefit. You're getting basically the downside of the age without the benefit of the five seasons of actual experience, four seasons of starting or something. It's very different, yeah.
So Aaron Fuller from UW at wide receiver was the last disappointing tester, it appears.
Yep. I mean, honestly, like, they have one bad tester at every position. So it's just – it's tough. I mean, I don't think he was the bottom, but I think he was, like, fourth from the bottom.
Fourth from the bottom,
yep. Times. He's also short. With sub 30 inch arms, which is almost impossible, and just like he ran a 4.59 and he's small, so that seems pretty bad.
Miles Bryant wasn't invited or didn't work out.
No, I think he was the bottom. I think he was the worst tester. Yeah, he was the worst tester at safety.
Oh my God.
Oh, I was looking for him at corner.
Yep, yeah. 7th percentile.
Wow.
That is 5 foot 7 7/8, 29.5 inch arms, which is like extremely, it's like me territory. 69 inch wingspan, which is nice. But yeah, 7th percentile tester.
Yeah. So not super encouraging on the UW front this year.
I mean, there's been more fun years, like that one year that they had like every good athlete. That was fun.
Well, I said it earlier, but again, it is always exciting to do this pod, get really fired up about certain prospects, and then see the Seahawks not take them.
I cannot wait for Jalen Reagor to be a Cardinal.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Lining opposite DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, I had forgotten about that until you just said that.
Yeah, that happened. That was a thing.
Well, Zach, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to the draft coming out less than a week from now, and hopefully you'll be able to join us. I'm sure you have nothing else going on to maybe wrap up the Seahawks draft after it happens and review their picks. Let's see. I'm thinking where they're going to draft Ross Blacklock.
And you're underselling them drafting Jonathan Taylor.
I was gonna say I think that the joke is that they draft Jonathan Taylor and then
in the first
Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the second round.
Not even gonna trade back to draft him.
Yeah.
So we would love to have you back to review those thrilling picks once the draft concludes. And thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Oh my God.
Another classic.
Fun as always, guys. I appreciated that. I didn't know where I was going with the DVD analogy until it happened, but I'm glad I did, because it does make sense to me now.
It was great.
That is what drafting a running back is. It's taking like the best possible version of like a technology that is now obsolete. Just so you can run some I formation.
We'll be learning all about that. It really, the reality of this is all of these conversations are if there's an NFL season. So we'll see what happens.
The good news is if they take a rookie, that at least they'll be around for when it's over. Jadeveon Clowney, if they sign him, like, he'll be gone because it won't have a season. But
I was really wondering what you could do to game the system of, I mean, I don't know how. Let's say that there's no season next year, which seems unlikely. But if there is no system, do they just run it back with the same picks?
I think you'd have to randomize it, right?
Yeah, that's the play, because the Connecticut or the Dallas Wings got the first round pick in 2021 from the Washington Mystics, who last year had the best record in the league, were the champions. It was a terrible pick, but it's like next year, that if it's a randomized draft, that could be anywhere.
Genius.
Yeah, it's
galaxy
brilliant stuff.
It's incredible. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited. The Seahawks are going to do something stupid, but honestly, that would be comforting at this point. Something normal, something like that brings us all together. So
this draft, I swear to God, it's the most important moment in like sports history. All of a sudden, I've never looked forward, because the draft always is happening while I'm working, and it's kind of boring because they have so long in between picks. You're just like, whatever. I have much better stuff going on in my life in late April, and now I've got nothing going on, and I cannot wait for this NFL draft.
I can't wait. I cannot wait for you to be like in the sixth round. It's like 10 a.m. Saturday. You've been up for 5 hours because of screaming children. And you're like ranting about some Illinois State fullback, which is super into the draft.
That's where we're at. That's all we have left.
Guys, he's going to be 23.7 years old in September. The track record of old fullbacks is terrible. This is another Chiaro Small.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Have a good one.
Do you play video games at all, Zach?
I last played video games probably in like 2005 or so, but I did remember some years. I dug out a few games though. NFL 2K5, the last Sega game I found, is compatible with my 360. So
wow,
which was exciting. Unfortunately, NCAA 2005, which is a Larry Fitzgerald cover, for those wondering, is not compatible with 360. And that was tough.
Wow.
Because NCAA 2005 had the bug where if you expressed interest in any recruit at any college, like one out of five stars would actually show interest in you. So you could just offer everyone in the first round, then withdraw their offers, and then go back in and swoop in, like nail like a class of like 25 star recruits. That was a real hack that like high school me was all about, and I was really hoping to like redo that during the quarantine, but unfortunately not backwards compatible.
Wait, can we talk about Ben never having played the Dynasty or GM mode of any video game?
Yeah, that is the stuff of like serial killers, like psychopaths. It's wild.
Not having played it is the stuff of serial killers.
Well, just like, if you're interested in sports, you're obviously very interested in like evaluating players and putting together teams. It's just a no-brainer. I don't get it. How could you have never enjoyed the brilliance of front office football?
The great thing about 2K5 and in the old Madden games, I haven't played the recent ones, but it was the fantasy draft ones. You could like build a team by drafting from like the entire league, and you could build like a super low cap because the teams were stupid and they wouldn't like prioritize cap very well. So you could just like build a monster team of all like young players and low cap numbers. Mm.
My main play was always trading for future year picks.
I still do that in 2K. I'll have like 18 of 30 first round picks in 2K. I never had the Larry Fitzgerald. I don't think. Do we have that one?
I don't specifically recall having it.
The next one was Desmond Howard. Like, that's one of the ones that I feel like there are very few. NCAA football was, when it existed, was always like my number one sports game by far.
But that was when I don't. Desmond Howard?
It was like Charles Woodson.
Okay.
Well, Charles Woodson was on 98.
Charles Woodson was 99.
Oh, you were right. 2006 was Desmond Howard.
I was going to say, I thought that was Desmond Howard.
You nailed that. How is that 2006?
I'm looking at the pictures of it. I'm not like, I didn't just...
Because they added the race for the Heisman mode in 2006, so therefore the Desmond Howard Heisman pose, which, of course, they should have gone with the Mario Bailey Heisman pose from the Rose Bowl that year, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Are you aware that Jared Zabransky
was the most random one?
Was that the same year that that one white Browns running back was the?
Oh, Peyton Hillis. Yes.
Yeah.
If that was
that Madden 08.
Oh my God.
It was not Madden. It must have been 07.
They were just like, we're going. Yeah, that was Vince Young on Madden.
Oh, 07 was Sean Alexander, friend of the pod.
He got hit with the Madden curse. He would have been
okay. Okay, I'm going to tell you something that seems impossible. Peyton Hillis was the cover in Madden 12.
Yeah, that's within the past decade. That's wild.
Jared McFadden on NCAA football, right?
Oh my God, this is. Let's remember some decades.
We'll always have that though. Like, and Denard Robinson too. But like, I feel like. Denard Robinson was on the last ever NCAA football.
Wait, Owen Schmidt was on the cover of the PSP version? Seahawks legend, Owen Schmidt.
He's a fullback?
Yes, he was.
It's a good thing that this is going into the pod, because this is obviously highly relatable content.
Oh, 100%. That's why I'm recording at all times.
Oh,
Denard Robinson was picked over Eddie Lacy, speaking of Seahawks legends.